before we start is an official amanuensis. I was trying to get Ellen, but she says she didn't feel that great.
I don't know what you mean. What is an amanuensis?
Write on the board.
Oh, I can
write on
the
board. You want to?
Sure.
She probably doesn't want to.
All right, Larry can do it. There's only a few things. And then I need an official fast reader. Ben? All right, Ben's the official fast reader. And then, Charlie?
No.
All heaven declare. Start it.
All heaven declares the glory of the risen Lord. Who can compare with the beauty of
Son. Thank you that he died for us and he was resurrected for us and he sits at your right hand. All of that glorifies you. And we pray that as we open up your scriptures tonight, you would bless us and give us wisdom, give us insight into your word and help us to grapple with hard things, help us to come to understand more about who you are and your plan for salvation. And thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. So there's going to be two microphones on the floor. One of them is going to, Mr. Adams is going to have, and if you have a question, wait to ask the question until he gets the microphone to you.
Okay, let's turn to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24. Larry's going to answer the questions. I'm just going to
write.
And Ben, would you read for us 1 through 35?
Matthew 24, 1 through 35. And Jesus came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. And he answered and said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another which will not be torn down." And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many. And you will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations on account of my name. And at that time many will fall away and will deliver up one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole land for a witness to the nations, and then the end shall come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things that are in the house. And let him who is on the field in the field not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are with child and to those who nurse babes in those days. But pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on a Sabbath, for then there will be a great tribulation, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall be. And unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, "Behold, here is the Christ," or "There he is," do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I have told you in advance. If therefore they say to you, "Behold, he's in the wilderness," do not go forth. Or, "Behold, he's in the inner rooms," do not believe them. For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Now learn the parable of the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. Even so you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words shall not pass away.
Okay, so we're going to just maybe a passage in which there are not many questions, although some of you may have questions. No, we want to make sure that you understand it, at least understand what I'm saying. You may not agree with what I'm saying. We want to make sure you understand what's so we don't want you to be bashful. Feel free to interrupt. I'm just going to make a few remarks. Understand what I'm saying? Stop me. And it doesn't matter if a man or a gal interrupt. It's okay. So this is a very famous passage, and as you probably know, most people parallel it with the book of Revelation. So if you look at chapter 24 of Matthew, it is paralleled with Revelation chapters 6 through chapter 19. And it doesn't often matter which eschatological scheme you use, they still see a parallel. So it's easier to grapple with Matthew 24 than to grapple with all of Revelation. Although we could say Matthew 24 might have one interpretation and Revelation might go beyond that. But we're not going to think about Revelation tonight. When we get to that Wednesday night, then we'll open the door to say, well, does Revelation go beyond this? But traditionally, in the circles that most of us have been taught in and grown up in, when we look at Matthew 24, most of it is held to be future. Not all of it, necessarily. Some schemes are different. But most of it is held to be future. And so the first thing that we have to come to grips with is the word generation. So look back in chapter 23 and notice he says in verse 36, "Truly I say to you, all these things shall come upon this generation." And he's talking about the fact that all the blood shed from Abel to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, who they slew between the temple and the altar, is all going to come upon this generation after they're sent their own scribes and prophets. And some of them they're going to kill, and some of them they're going to crucify, and some of them they're going to persecute from town to town. But Jesus says, you're going to be punished for all of it. It's all going to come on this generation. And then chapter 24, and we come down to the end there in verse 34, and it says, truly I say to you, this generation shall not pass away until all these things take place. So when you look at verse 34 of chapter 24, and you think of all that's said prior to that, verses 1 through 33, he is saying all this is going to come before this generation passes away. So we have to grapple with what is the word generation. Now turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter 2, and Ben, read for us verse 9.
1 Peter 2, 9. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light.
Okay, so notice the word race. The word race there and the word generation in Matthew 24 are two different Greek words. However, some people wish to translate Matthew 24, 34 as race. All these things, this race will not pass away until all these things take place. Well, if it's race, and then we think about the Jewish race, then that gives it a broad context. There's only one problem. The word generation does not mean race. Never in the New Testament does it mean race. And if you pick up your commentaries and you pick up your books on prophecy and you go to find someone who says it means race, they will give you no reasons why it means race because they don't have any reasons why it means race. So we're going to write the word generation up here. And I'm going to give you some verses that Larry will write underneath it. We'll just look at one of them. But Matthew chapter 11, verse 16. Matthew 11, 16. They're all going to be in Matthew. Matthew 12, 39, 41, 42, 45. Matthew 16, verse 4. Matthew 17, 17. And then the two we're looking at, Matthew 23, what is it? Is it 36 or 36? In Matthew 24, 34. So let's turn to Matthew chapter 12. And then, Ben, if you just read for us verses 39 through 45, that'll pretty much cover it there.
Matthew 12, I'll begin at verse 38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, Teacher, we want to see a sign from you. But he answered and said to them, An evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign, and yet no sign shall be given to it but the sign of Jonah the prophet. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the sea monster, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh shall stand up with this generation at the judgment, and shall condemn it because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And behold, something greater than Jonah is here. The queen of the south shall rise up with this generation at the judgment and shall condemn it, because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, something greater than Solomon is here. Now when the unclean spirit goes out of a man, it passes through waterless places, seeking rest, and does not find it. Then it says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when it comes, it finds it unoccupied, swept, and put in order. Then it goes and takes along with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the last state of that man becomes worse than the first. That is the way it will be with this evil generation.
Okay, so nobody has a dispute in chapter 12 as to and most often he's referring to that particular generation that he's addressing. And in Matthew chapter 23, verse 36, no one has a question about what the word generation means. And everyone agrees when it says this generation that it's the blood shed that is going to be visited upon Israel. Because the generation alive when Christ was there is called an evil and adulterous generation. Why are they adulterous? because they're choosing someone other than Christ. They're idolaters, which is compared to adultery. So the question is then in Matthew chapter 24, 34, does generation, when he says this generation, does he mean the generation of his day? And there's nothing in the text for us to decide that it means something different. It says this generation. That's what it says in the Greek, and that's what, the way we should take it. Now, some people translate it as race, and some people say, well, it means generation, but it means the generation that will be alive at the time when all these events take place. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a little far-fetched. The disciples ask a question, and Jesus answers the question, and he says, okay, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. So if that's the case, then it means everything from verse 1 to verse 33, and maybe even beyond, we won't deal with that tonight, all happens by the time or before this generation passes away. Now, with respect to that, does everybody understand what's being said? Or does someone have a question of any kind? It's fair. You don't have to agree with me. You can be wrong if you want to be. So you notice that means, that here's the implication, if all these things take place while this generation is alive, that means verse 29 and 30 takes place. That is, the sun's going to grow dark, the moon's not going to shine, the stars are going to fall. The sign of the Son of Man is going to appear in the heavens. And back to verse 21, there's going to be a great tribulation such as has not been and never will be such again. And back to verse 15, the abomination of desolation will have appeared in this generation. And back to verse 14, the gospel will have been preached throughout the whole world. Now, do you have any questions? Okay, so here's a problem we have in dealing with the Bible. We read certain things, and our brains engage. And that's a good thing. But sometimes our brains engage without engaging biblically. In other words, we think according to the times we live in instead of thinking within the Bible. So where you go first on anything is first find it in the Bible. Don't look outside. First find it in the Bible. And so usually there are, when Jesus is saying something, there is an Old Testament allusion or quotation or something like it that gives us some kind of hint of where we're going. Now, look back up at the beginning of chapter 24. And look in verse 3, the disciples come and they ask this question. Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Okay, what are the things that he's saying there? When will these things be? What is he talking about? What are the disciples asking?
When
will these things be? But what things are they asking about? The destruction of the temple. Not one stone is going to be left on another. Okay? And so by the time you're done, it's going to happen in this generation. And what will be the sign of your coming? Well, now that's a little trickier, but we'll talk about that in a minute. And then, and of the end of the age. Now, when you read the word end of age, what do you think of? Yeah, we think, well, we're talking about the end of the world. Okay? How do you know that's what it means? You see, because it doesn't mean that.
That's not fair.
Charlie says that's not fair.
What's not fair?
You know, that there's words in here that regular human beings can read, but it doesn't mean that.
Well, but see, we just use two different terms. It says the end of the age, and we say the end of the world. Those are two different ideas. So an age is an age. And so if you look at the way Paul writes, he talks about the ages. So you got one age and another age and another age. So when they say the end of the age, the first thing we have to ask, well, what age are they talking about is going to end? What age would it be? Okay, so we need some kind of definition. And that's a major problem because always, I mean, that's the way I approached it. We always look at it and we say, okay, it's talking about the end of time. When will this be? Well, automatically, that thrusts you beyond 70 AD, doesn't it? Okay, so let's just look at a couple of passages, and we're going to write down end of the age up here, Mr. Larry. Oh, yeah, you can.
Craig, can we back up a second? What are they looking for by the sign of his coming? I mean, that seems to imply they expect him to go away. But as we've seen already many times, they were kind of stupefied about him being crucified and going away. So what are they asking about your coming?
Okay, can we hang on to that question?
Sure.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay.
In terms of generation, there's a historical Jesus that Wright, what's his name? Wright? N.T. Wright talks about. What is the connection between the historical Jesus and his reference to this generation erroneously as generations at the, not that he's speaking to, but in terms of some kind of future context? You said his disciples asked him a question. Jesus answered the question. Whenever I think about the historical Jesus in terms of these scholars who are reading the Bible.
What do you mean by the?
Okay, what I mean, all right. I have no idea.
I was with the historical Peter last week. What do you mean by historical?
Okay, so right there, it's a semantic trick. Somebody wants to put words into Jesus' mouth, and so they use the word historical, and they don't mean historical. They mean Jesus' disciples asked him a question. Jesus answered the question. But as a scholar, I want to put words into Jesus' mouth and make his answer some kind of convoluted theory that we're all sitting here saying, that we're all sitting here for. We're all sitting here for a reason. That's because we don't see Jesus answering a question just like you would ask me a question and I would answer the question.
That's your point.
Right.
One thing that we need to do when we look through the Gospels, a whole lot more than we tend to do, because we approach the Gospels trying to prove that Jesus is God. If you take a seminary class on Matthew, that's what you're going to get. It's the way it's structured. That's what they're going to hand out to you. You're trying to prove that Jesus is God. But that's not the point of Matthew, or the point of Mark, or the point of Luke. It's more found in John, but that's not the point of the Gospels. And so we need to think of Jesus as what? A human being. He's God. I'm not trying to play that down. But when you put yourself back into the context of the Gospels, when the people are talking with him, what are they thinking? They're thinking, here's this Jesus. Now, there are proofs in the Gospels that he is God. But he's you and me. He's one of us, and he's answering a question. So the disciples have asked a question. He's answered it. This generation. Is that fair, Peter?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, the end of the age. So let's turn to Hebrews chapter 9. We're just going to put down three verses. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 26, Ben, but maybe it's 23 through the end of the chapter. I can't remember the context anyway.
Yep.
23 through 28.
Hebrews 9. Therefore, it was necessary for the copies of the things in the heavens to be cleansed with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ did not enter a holy place made with hands, a mere copy of the true one, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Nor was it that he should offer himself often, as the high priest enters the holy place year by year with blood not his own. Otherwise, he would have needed to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now, once, at the consummation of the ages, he has been manifested to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment, so Christ also, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, shall appear a second time for salvation, without reference to sin, to those who eagerly await him.
Okay, the consummation of the ages. There's our term. End of the ages. Jesus appeared. End of the ages. Okay, now turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And for the sake of time, Ben, maybe we'll read, I don't know where the judgments start, verse 5 or verse 4 through 11. Picking from the Old Testament.
Yep. 1 Corinthians 10. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now these things happen as examples for us, that we should not crave evil things as they also craved. And do not be idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Nor let us act immorally, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpents. Nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come.
Ends of the ages. When's the end of the ages coming and the end of the age? Okay, now, there are whole lots of similar expressions in the New Testament, which you and I have typically pushed out to the last day, what we call the last day. But think, for example, of Hebrews chapter 1. Jesus has spoken to us in these last days. It's the last days in Jesus' time. It's the end of the ages in Jesus' time. And that's what the disciples are asking about. What is the end of the age? So if we think Jewishly, then we have an age over here that is the age of the Old Testament, particularly the Moses age, because you have the temple and all that goes with it, but they're looking for the Messiah age. And so you're going to come along, and this age is going to begin, and a new age is going to start. What's the end of the age? Which helps us then, what's the sign of your coming? We think you're Messiah. When are you going to start? One age is going to end, a new age is going to begin. Now, we can prove that out a little bit if you just think your way through Hebrews. Because Hebrews is working towards showing, okay, there was this new covenant, which implies the old is becoming obsolete, chapter 8, verse 13. It's not obsolete yet. It's becoming obsolete. And then you get into chapter 9, he gives all the tabernacle furniture and the sacrifices. And then when you get to chapter 10, this is a shadow of the coming good things. So he's making a big distinction. One ends and something new starts. And so when the disciples say, okay, what's the end of the age? That's exactly what they mean. It's just we've been accustomed to thinking of the word end of the age as the end of time. Any questions? When is the end of the age of Jewishness? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, when is? Well, that's how we would state it. I'm not so sure on how clear they are about all of that. They might, we might state the way they're asking it. We might say it like this: when is Messiah going to begin? Because that means everything else ended. Okay, and then in the New Testament, another words that are going to be used for those ideas is one is a creation, but then when Messiah starts, you've got a new creation. And we're accustomed to that in one sense, but we only think of it individualistically. I'm a new creation in Christ. But we're talking about a whole new creation that starts. Not a creation of a brand new earth and a brand new sun and a brand new moon, but all of those things represent something, and now a new creation starts. But just think of it in terms of ages. So you have the Mosaic age that comes to an end, and now Messiah's age begins. And we would use the word for Messiah's age as kingdom. When's the kingdom going to start? Any other questions? Okay.
This may not be the time to answer this, but you said it before in some of the services that, you know, there's a differences of opinion about when the different books of the New Testament were written.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I guess we can't really prove it, but obviously Paul and Peter, they died before 70.
Mm-hmm.
So their writings were before 70. Mm-hmm. Is there any way that can be pinned down about John's writings? Most people think that's way after 70.
So, not the right people.
Well, I know, but is that really going to always be just, you know?
Yes, that's going to be a conflict. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm just saying.
We'll answer that, Howard, in the court.
That's
of the
what
time.
I said. It's okay. Probably not
yeah.
the time.
Okay. John.
So the disciples asked, what would be the sign of your coming in the end of the age based on the fact that Jesus said that the temple would be torn down?
Yeah.
But the temple was torn down in the past, and they didn't ask, no one at that time asked if that was the end of an age then. So what's the difference here?
There's always a... this is part of it, but there's always in the Old Testament, when the tabernacle ceases, the temple begins. When the Babylonian temple ends, there's a prediction of a new temple. And I know we have to deal with the naughty problem of Ezekiel and his temple. But when you come to Matthew, there's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the temple's going to end, and there's no new temple. It's over. Jesus is the temple. That's the difference. Now, again, how much the disciples understood for sure, I don't know. But that is the way the word age is used in the New Testament. It doesn't mean the end of time. Any other questions? Yeah. I'll repeat her question. She doesn't want to be on
the
tape.
The reason for the microphone is so that
everyone can hear you.
So Selma can hear.
Say hello, Selma. And Bob. Bob asked for a tape. Oh, we're getting there. All right. Any more on the end of the age? Okay, then let's just notice verse 6. Is it verse 6? Yes, it's verse 6. But that is not yet the end. Verse 8, this is only the beginning of birth pangs. And then verse 13, the one who endures to the end will be saved. And then verse 14, the gospel goes everywhere. And then the end comes. So you notice, Jesus is answering the question. What's the end of the age? Okay, this isn't not the end.
The one who endures to the end will be saved. And then when the gospel goes throughout the whole world, then the end comes. So when you get down to verse 14, we're at the end. Now, from verse 15 on, we're going to go back and we're going to look over that time a second time with some other things to ask and answer. So that does bring us to what Nissi's asking. What about the gospel being preached in all of the world? Okay, so we need our amanuensis up here to gospel preached in all the world. Yeah. Am I in your way?
I already know you had such an important title.
Can you spell it?
Ben, did you read 1 Corinthians 10, 6 through 11?
Okay, so let's turn to Luke chapter 2, gospel preached in all the world. Gospel in the world, you could put up there, okay? Luke chapter 2, I think just verse 1, Ben, I'll see if that's it. chapter 3, sorry, chapter 3, verse 1. No, chapter 2. Luke
chapter 2. Now it came about in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that a census be taken of all the inhabited earth.
All the inhabited earth. Is that what everyone has written in their Bible? Huh? What else do we have? World. Okay, so in all the inhabited earth, it's the word world, and it's a certain word in Greek, oikoumene. And it is a reference to the Roman Empire. That's what Jesus is talking about in Matthew 24. All it's going to be preached throughout what we might say it this way, the known world, the inhabited world, the world that counts. Okay? Now, lest you think I'm nuts, turn to Colossians chapter 1 and then give us verse 6 and verse 23. Colossians chapter 1, verse 6 and verse 23.
Which has come to you, just as in all the world, also it is constantly bearing fruit and increasing, even as it has been doing in you also since the day you heard of it and understood the grace of God in truth.
Okay, in all the worlds, going in all the world, then verse 23.
If indeed you continue in the faith, firmly established and steadfast, and not moved away from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which was proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, was made a minister.
Okay, so Paul is saying the gospel has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven. Does it sound like he's limited? No, it doesn't sound like he's limited. Okay, turn back to Romans. We have two passages in Romans. Romans chapter 1, verse 8, Ben. And then Romans 16, 25 through 26. Romans 1, verse 8. Hope I'm right here.
First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, because your faith is being proclaimed throughout the whole world.
Okay. Romans 16, 25 through 26.
Now to him who is able to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery which has been kept secret for long ages past, but now is manifested, and by the scriptures of the prophets, according to the commandment of the eternal God, has been made known to all the nations, leading to obedience of faith.
Has been made known to all the nations. This gospel will be preached in the world for a witness to all the nations. And then the end comes. Now, does it sound like that matches up with what Jesus is saying? And so what I'm saying is, we got our brains, and we think in a certain way, and we say, well, it hasn't gone to all the nations in the whole world yet. But you have to work inside the Bible. What God has for us is inside the two covers. He's not asking us to look outside. So if we look inside, then we can put it together, and we can say, okay, yeah, the gospel wasn't actually preached everywhere on the earth yet. But it was preached to the known world, and Paul says it's gone to all the nations within the known world, which is what Jesus is talking about. And if we get the idea that we're not talking about the final coming of Christ, because there's going to be a coming here in Matthew 24, but not the final one, then that should put our mind at ease. Sure enough, the gospel has to go throughout the whole world. But what Jesus is talking about is something that's going to happen in this generation, and within this generation, sure enough, according to Paul, the gospel was preached to every creature under heaven, to the nations, in the known world. And then the end comes. Questions. Problems.
Paul, I'm sorry. That is Paul's writings.
Yeah.
And we know that he died before 70.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Pretty much we know all the... I mean, we don't know this for sure because we only know mostly by church history. And they're not. It's not always accurate. But all the disciples probably died by 70 A.D., except maybe John. But even John.
So all of them died except John, except maybe even John.
John might have died too.
Okay.
There's a possibility. Okay. Any other questions? Is anybody just saying, that doesn't wash with me?
So in a nutshell, 10 years ago, how would you have explained this?
Well, just like people explain it. Oh, the gospel hasn't gone to the whole world yet. When it gets there, the end will come. And so, what's Campus Crusade's mission? We got to reach all the language of the earth so Jesus can come. Isn't that what they say? Yeah. Where do they get it from? Right here. But we're not looking in the Bible. We're looking about our understanding of what verse 14 means instead of saying, wait a minute, Jesus said to his disciples, okay, I've made things known to you, but not everything, because you're not quite ready for it yet. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you the Holy Spirit, and he's going to teach you, and he's going to testify about things concerning me. And so the rest of the New Testament, starting in Acts and following, or especially Romans and following, is exactly what we're talking about, what Jesus said he would do. And so they write it down, people like Paul, and then we should have the good common sense to say, okay, that's where Jesus wants us to look for our answers, right there. Yeah.
What does it mean to be anachronistic?
That is always...
Okay, chronos is the Greek word for time, and awe is a negation of it. Awe chronos, anachronistic. So you're not looking at things in the proper time. You're looking at it from... That's what I'm saying. We're trying to interpret this through our times and the way we think instead of the way the Bible is given to us and the way the Bible thinks. And it's definitely a hard switch for us. I mean, it's not like I woke up one day and said, oh, this is what I think. I've been working on it since 1999. I hope you guys are faster.
Craig, I've thought of something that is challenging for me in terms of God's paradox, and when Jesus speaks of all the world, he's talking about all the known world, and it's hard for me to accept that God would just focus on a specific segment of the world being a person in the 21st century. I think about a global understanding. And so I just wanted to get your explanation about the paradoxes that come up when we think about God's judgment and God's mercy, and in this case, God's Christ's ability to save everyone, but at the same time, Christ saved the elect. Mm-hmm.
So the kingdom's compared to a mustard seed, and it starts out as a small thing, and it grows, and it grows, and it grows, and then the birds of the air come to nest in it. And so, yeah, it starts small, but we have to remember God is not obliged to redeem anyone. We're all justly under condemnation, and that's what we talk about grace then. So God had graciously started in Jerusalem and went to Judea and went to Samaria and then went to the end of the earth, which is probably meaning the end of the Roman Empire, not all over the earth because they didn't reach North America yet then. And then Jesus came. But, of course, that wasn't judgment day in the final sense. Not everybody was wiped out when Jesus came in 70 A.D. Only a certain portion of people came under judgment then. And the other people lived on. But that's a true statement, Peter. There's still lots of people who haven't heard the gospel yet, and a lot of them are going to die never having heard it. And that's God's justice and grace. Okay, so with the gospel to all nations, is it a chore? Do you understand what I'm saying? Todd Adams, you understand, don't you? Well, is it hard for us to accept that if we take inside the Bible, the question's answered? Okay? Okay.
So the audience here is the disciples, right?
Yeah.
And do they think of themselves as Jews still, or do they think of themselves as something different than Jews?
Jews.
Okay, and so when he says they will, are you going to talk about the rest of the stuff inside? Like the tribulation and put to death?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about some of it, and then you'll bring up what I don't talk about.
So, well then I guess I'll just wait.
Since we only have 12 minutes left.
12 minutes. And then you can go home.
Lisa, ask her a question.
Well, it just seems like when we talk about the destruction of the temple, that's a judgment on Israel. But here, this looks like tribulation for believers. And so, and especially with what's going on in Revelation, it seems like the believers left Israel, left Jerusalem. Even the churches in Revelation aren't the Jerusalem church. So I don't really know what my question is. It just seems like we've got two different people.
I think it's a good question. So verse 9, then they will deliver you up to the tribulation created by all findings.
How can I answer all nations? It's a Hebraic way of speaking. So what happened to the Jews up to 70 AD? For the most part, they were persecuted by Christians. Most part, they were persecuted by whom? Jews. But then, in the end, Rome jumped in. And Rome got on the bandwagon. And Rome is comprised of a bunch of nations. And so, yeah, in their latter existence, say 60, 63, 64, onward towards 70, Rome is out to get the Christians. But not so much before that. And so, yeah, you're going to be persecuted and you're going to be hated by all nations. That's Rome. That's believers. Believers.
Well, believers persecuted because
believers. In what?
In Eusebius.
Church historian, Eusebius.
Well, I can't answer to everything, but if you stick inside the Bible.
Well, but where did you get that information that
Uh,
No, I know you're not. You get it in the Bible. You don't get it in Acts because it doesn't happen in Acts. But when you look at Timothy, for example, then Rome's on the case of Paul. It's not that I'm not saying outside doesn't support it. I'm not saying I'm giving you a hard time about Eusebius. But when you look in here, the people that are going to be persecuted are the followers of Christ. That's the ones that are going to be persecuted. And you go back to chapter 23, it's the people who come to Israel, the prophets and the scribes and the wise men, believers. They're going to be persecuted by the Jews. But it's going to expand out to the nations, no doubt about it.
So where did we jump from?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so when we take the people who are asking the questions are the disciples, right? Four of them to be precise. The question is, how do we move from Jesus talking to disciples or believers to general you? Is that fair? And the answer is, well, that's how all the Bible works. So everything that is, pretty much everything that's written in the epistle is written to an audience, and yet we say God's talking to us because we're in the class of believers. So what's said to the disciples fits the class of believers in that generation. It doesn't fit us. We're not in that generation. There's application to us about our times, but it doesn't fit us. We're not going through that. We never will, what they went through. Or an even one.
Was the flood tribulation? The reason I ask that is because down here where it says there'll be a great tribulation such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now and blah, blah, blah. Was the flood a tribulation? Because I think only seven people survived that thing. Eight, whatever. Okay. A few.
Go to one and you'll find.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, a few people survived that thing. So
and
was the flood a tribulation?
That person was sure happy he or she was on board. I can tell you that. All right, so now we're going to answer Charlie's question. So let us turn to... Okay, go for it.
So staying right where we were, though, the first question is, when will these things be? And that was a destruction of the temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the next question was, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus seems to go right into answering the question regarding the disciples and what's happening to the believers.
And your point is?
That's a question. So,
well, it didn't sound like a
question. If everything happened in 70 A.D.,
well, it's this process. So he's making these statements, and he's saying, this isn't the end. And then later on, he's going to say, when you see all these things happening, then you know I'm near, right at the door. So he is answering their question. But he's putting them in it because this is what's going to happen over this period of time, and they're in it. And when you see all this happening, when you're persecuted, when you're hated by all, then you know. This is one of the signs. These things are happening. I'm right at the door. It's near. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
The preaching of the gospel being the end, and in between the destruction of the temple and the preaching of the gospel is that the tribulation of the believers, in a sense.
Okay, so you have general in verses 4 through 14. We have general, and then comes the end. And the end there is signified by the fact the gospel's preached to the whole world, to all the nations. Then in verse 15, he's going to start back up. So, Since this is the case, so here's what you do. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel, take note. So this fits back into that time, and now he's gonna go through the time again, but now he's talking more down near the end of the time because he's talking about the abomination of desolation, which is right at the end, and he's talking about this tribulation that Charlie brought up. So these two things together, let's start with the tribulation. They're very interconnected. But before I say that, let me say one more thing. When you think about what's the sign of your coming, when will these things be, and the sign of your coming, and the end of the age? Look, they're very similar questions. When will these things be? Because Jesus is the one who's saying he's going to destroy the temple. So he's got to come do it. And what will be the sign of your coming? And if this is coming to an end, then you're going to reign. When's the new age? When is this going to be? They're all interrelated. Okay. So, great tribulation we need up here on the board. Mr. Yandel. Okay, let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 5. Ezekiel chapter 5. And the reason these verses are important is because we've lived in our times and we've read about the Holocaust. And we say, okay, that was huge. There's been nothing like that yet. And so the tribulation has to be beyond that because he says there's not been anything like this, nor will there ever be anything like it again. So we're looking for a future tribulation. Ezekiel chapter 5. And Ben, verse 9.
And because of all of your abominations, I will do among you what I have not done, and the like of which I will never do again.
Okay. So what happens to the people in Ezekiel? They go into captivity. Well, this is talking about the judgment that's coming. It's perspective. So some are going to go into captivity, some are going to be killed, and some are going to eke it out on the land as poor people. And there's never going to be the like of it again, Jesus, or Ezekiel's saying. So I want you to notice, this is a Hebraic way of speaking. We are literalists. So back up in verse 2 where Jesus says, one stone's not left on the other. When I went to seminary, I always heard the argument, when you go over to Israel, there's still two stones on top of each other. So it hasn't been fulfilled yet. We talk just like they do. And we use exaggeration, if we could put it that way, to make a point. This is bad. This is huge. Okay, turn to Exodus chapter 11. Exodus chapter 11. Yeah, this is Charlie talk. 11 verse 6, Ben.
Moreover, there shall be a great cry in all the land of Egypt, such as there has not been before, and such as shall never be again.
Is that so? Great cry? There's never been a cry like this, and there'll never be one like it again? I don't think so. And so what I'm trying to show you is when Jesus says, you know, there hasn't been a tribulation like this, nor shall there ever be one again, that's to make a point. But we've grown up on literal, even though we don't even talk that way ourselves. You know, the one thing you do in your marriage is you say, you never take the garbage out. Is that true? If you said you never change a dirty diaper, that might be true. So all I'm trying to show you is, you know, Hebrews have their way of language too, just like we do. And so here we find within the Bible this kind of language again. And Jesus is using that kind of language because, after all, he's a Jew. He talks like that. So when we say, well, yeah, the tribulation around 70 AD was bad, but what it says is there's really a bad one coming. Well, that's not the point of Matthew 24. The point is, it's bad. It's really bad. And, of course, the estimates are 1.2 million Jews lost their lives. And sure enough, in the destruction of the temple, at least if we can trust writings like Josephus, the curses of Deuteronomy chapter 28 came along, where a woman is eating her newly born baby. And that's bad, right? It even disgusted the Romans who came upon it. But people were starving. It's bad. That's the point. Okay. So, I don't know if I can get you to accept this, if you buy the argument. But using Exodus and using Ezekiel, I thought of something else today, and I should have written it down because I forgot. It's something else Jesus said that's said as exaggeration. I mean, if we took it literally, it would be ridiculous. Charlie's moaning.
No, when it's one way and when it's the when it's
you're
the
supposed to
way.
Get a teacher who didn't lead you astray for 20 years.
Well, since we messed up on that one, now what do we do?
Okay. So, we're past time. Are we going to quit? Come back next week? Yes. Okay. Well, you know, some people who are here have young kids here and they need to go. So here's what we're going to do. We'll meet again next week. We'll pick up, we'll finish this off, then we'll move on to the next topic. And we're not going to make this in every Wednesday night. We may do three in a row, then we'll take a break, maybe wait till January and do some more where we're dealing. And we're going to try to fit everything together. So John says, make sure you fit Ezekiel 38 and 39 into the whole scheme. So John's got a question there. So we will answer it, but it's going to take time because we do want interaction. We don't want you to just listen to a lecture and not be able to say, well, you know, I don't quite agree with that, or I'm not sure yet. We want you to see it. And so there are a few more issues in chapter 24 that we need to take care of, and we can do that in maybe the first half next week and then move on. Let's bow in prayer. Lord,